and this is the third episode of the Fab Lab 10 a.m. show, highlighting Fab Lab's part in digital art. So, John, Steve, let's talk some Fab Lab.
Thanks, Scott. And as always, we want to thank our host, Scott Nelson. Thrilled you're here. Glad you can host with us.
Thanks so much.
And?
Absolutely. This is Steve. And it's great that we're back today with two exciting guests talking about digital art and showcasing how digital art and what we do at the Fab Lab actually merge together.
Yeah, and Steve always downplays his role in civil engineering, so I'm going to give him a shout out right away. We've actually used some civil engineering to, if you heard the first episode, we made some guitars. So we're looking at ways to use it. Steve's been actually helping me look at create concrete slices for some of the optical art I'm working on too. And the construction in this area right now, if you're not familiar with those careers, are on fire. And there is really great things going on.
But that's one of the really cool things about this area, because long ago, it used to be STEM was the hot button topic. STEM this, STEM that. Yeah. But then it morphed into STEAM because they added art back into that concept of engineering and science, because art plays a huge component in engineering, because we have to have the imagination, the thought process. We're not just duplicating things. And that's what art brings back to the engineering environment, is that creativity, that inspiration, that dream ability to create something new and better. And that's where art comes into play.
Yeah, and aesthetics and creativity in design and engineering is a critical too. So this story goes all the way back to when I first got hired at Gateway, and I go in to interview for my job. And of course, I'm not an engineer. I have a bachelor's in arts. I studied sculpture. So I'm like sitting in the room at the interview thinking, okay, are these guys really going to hire me? I'm an artist. So the short story is I got the job, and then immediately I'm like, okay, we got to start doing digital art. Now, I grew up in Racine, and I moved to Chicago after college, and it was 30 years since I came back. And when I came back to the art scene here, it was a lot of the same people that I had seen before. So imagine my surprise when I was part of the Kenosha Council on the Arts, and we had a concerned citizen stop in to hear what was going on in the Kenosha art scene. So I would like to introduce our guests, because that's where I first met David Jones and Marilyn Propp. They are artists. David, tell us a little bit. I know you worked Landfall Press in Chicago in the 90s, right?
Yeah, and that was where really I got my training in printmaking. But we actually, Marilyn and I, started a nonprofit organization in Chicago in 1990, a place called Anchor Graphics. And I took the training that I received at Landfall and kind of brought it to the community. We wanted to create a place where folks in the community could have a place to work, to learn, to share, to grow as artists and as printmakers. Thinking about, you know, will this work? We just decided that we needed to do that. And so Marilyn and I, we did that for, 25 years.
Wow.
And then moved to Kenosha with the hopes of opening up a shop in Kenosha, and that morphed into the shop that we now run in Milwaukee called Anchor Press Paper and Print.
Yeah, and it's, for those of you listening, printmaking is a lot more involved. So if you study printmaking, the traditional types like lithography or intaglio, they're much more labor intensive, and you need a press. You need the equipment for it. So I know in Chicago, there's like the Printers Coalition?
The Chicago something? Printmakers Collaborative.
Collaborative, right.
Sputnik Press, and some other Hoof Print is a small contract shop. And
right.
So there are a few shops.
So that's a way they can kind of pool the resources, and everyone can get time on a press, because everyone might not own a press. And then you guys taught Columbia, too, for a while. Is that not correct?
That's right. We moved Anchor Graphics was moved to Columbia. They
In 2006.
In 2006, thanks. And received all of our assets, our presses and stuff, and then we set up shop there, and it was great for 5 years. And then for 5 years, when the enrollment dropped, the college was unable to kind of see the connections of technology and possibilities with printmaking, with the larger context of you know, the idea of a young person being able to get a job when they get out of college. So we were while I was at Columbia, I went for my master's degree, and was introduced to all kinds of wonderful things, laser printing and CD 3D printing, and that really just changed my practice.
Yeah, it's a really great thing to mention because there is a lot of short-sighted, and that's one of the things I found is there's great misperception when people talk about digital art, or it's much better to think of using digital media or manufacturing in art. And I've worked with people who are like, oh, it's digital art, so it's going to be a bunch of lights flashing, beep, beep, boop, boop. And it's like, not really. A painting still looks like a painting. A print still looks like a print. So what David and I did was, now I had the fortune of meeting him at the council meeting, and I was excited to know that two artists of the caliber of David and Marilyn had moved to the Kenosha area. And I took one of your workshops. I loved it. We were 3D printing from Xeroxes, and that was great. It was an amazing workshop. And we started just collaborating. I'm like, you know, I got this Fab Lab. Why don't you come in and let's see what we can do? So we started applying artistic techniques to some of the equipment that was there. In particular, we found the laser pretty useful. We could do woodblock printing with it. I think my big experiment was trying to ink up a plate and burn off the excess ink and then run it through the press, which didn't work real well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
but the idea of reapproaching aesthetic and then creative process in general. So, and I've spoken at this at conferences. When you have creative process, you come up with an idea and you make something. When you do it in the digital realm, you come up with an idea and then you have to translate it into what you're going to use, the laser or the, which usually involves turning it into a computer image or a computer compatible image. As you do this, the process generates two or three more ideas of how you might approach it. So basically the process itself creates this wonderful feedback loop of creativity, and you start seeing different iterations of process that you can do with it. So we played around a little bit with 3D printing and some CNC. Digital art, as far as I can tell, a lot of people have been using it for a long time, and this is a misperception, I think. There were people doing simple stuff like hacking scanners and Xerox machines back in the 70s.
I need to mention Colette Bangert and Jeff Bangert from Lawrence, Kansas.
Okay.
And they were doing digital artwork. Well, Jeff was the mathematician, Colette is the artist. Jeff has since passed away. They were doing digital art
70s.
In the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah, and yeah. Colette is still making art. I believe she's probably in her 80s now.
Nice. Didn't we invite her to show?
Yes,
I think?
We did. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and
that's good. Yeah, nice.
I remember the first time I ran into digital image. I was doing some frame shop work. I knew how to do matting, so I always worked in frame shops. And someone brought in, you know, a print that they had generated on their computer. And I remember being a little unresolved at that point in time because it was, you know, mid-80s, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about it. Did the artist generate it with their own hand? Is that typically a stereotype in it? But the idea of let's say I'm a painter and I have 9 paintbrushes in my toolkit and I use all 9 of the paintbrushes. Well, if a digital scanner comes along and that happens to be my 10th paintbrush, why wouldn't I use another tool in the toolbox?
Sure.
So, yeah, and it's in terms of it expanding what I can do. And then again, I'm still going back in and generating things. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your art. Now, David, you've done some really great things on computer. You've integrated sound in and turned it into visual images. And then, Marilyn, I want you to also talk a little bit about your art. Sure. And go for it.
Well, okay, so I started out as a photographer. That's really my background is photography. And in the 70s, Marilyn and I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and I went to a place called the Center for Photographic Studies. And it was a small school with an enrollment of probably about
12
students. And we lived and breathed fine art photography for 2 years.
Wow.
And it was expected for us to, you know, we were expected to get jobs and support ourselves as photographers or artists. And so I ended up getting a job in a retouching lab and also as a color and black and white film printer.
Wow.
And but I think that one of the things during that time, I met an artist, Jerry Uelsman, And Jerry Uelsman, his practice at the time was to take six or seven negatives, have six or seven enlargers, and then build these kind of collages, if you will. I was thinking about this today, and so we put, you know, we're doing these kind of collages of photographic images, putting them together, and then making a new kind of visual statement. And so I think a really important part of all this kind of journey is curiosity, and you know, asking the questions, what if? And you know, you talked about STEM or STEAM,
right,
and how that's so important, because curiosity leads by asking those kinds of questions, the what if questions. What if I do this? If you don't ask those questions, you may never take that risk and try to come up with an answer to that question. And so when I was in grad school at Columbia College, I was introduced to this workshop and using this program called Max. And initially it was kind of like, yeah, whatever. And I'm a photographer, I'm an artist, I'm not a digital guy. And but after I got out of school, I started to kind of go, you know, I wonder if I can take all of these images that I've amassed over the years, like, you know, I might have something like 3,000 or 4,000 images, and I've never really been happy with a single image. But what happens? What if I start to feed these in a random way, a la John Cage, random chance operations, and what happens? And so Max became this incredible tool that I had to kind of relearn, teach myself how to use it, cobbled together this kind of device, which that's what I call it, the device, and I basically put in images and can modulate the speed, the tone, the density, and these images come out, and I am amazed at some of the visual relationships that happen. And then what I do is film those, and then from those I take still images, and then from those I can either hand print them or digitally print them, and they become images that stand on their own. And now I'm working more. It's like, okay, how do I bring sound into that to become another element, another tool, another paintbrush,
yeah,
as you say,
yeah,
John.
Yeah.
So
I just want to add that I've been with David since 1973, and his imagery always has a sense of mystery and memory and fragments of time. And now his images, he's merging them together so that they have that sense of dreamlike longing or mystery, all of them. And you can see his work. It's currently, we have each have a solo show at the Anderson Arts Center at 6603 3rd Avenue in Kenosha. The show opens February 5th and runs till March 19th. March 19th, there'll be a closing reception. And the gallery is open from 1 to 4 every day, I believe.
Yeah, and if you have an opportunity, please, please get out to see it. I know by the time this airs, I don't know how relevant it'll be. You can also, there's probably other ways that people can see your artwork, too, after the show.
Sure.
Is there a website you guys have that, yep, they can go to know where your stuff is being shown?
www.propjonesstudio.com.
Okay, and we always have you say it twice, so say it again.
www.propjonesstudio.com. That's P-R-O-P-P-J-O-N-E-S studio.com.
Now, David, take apart this Max for us. I'm a lightweight. What are you talking about? You say Max, and I'm like, what the heck is Max?
What is Max? So Max, right, is a what does it do? It's, well, there's Max MSP. MSP was designed for sound. I think Cycling 74 is the company that owns it or built it, designed it. And what it does is it allows individuals who are not programmers to put together strings of modules that enable the computer to process information in very specific kinds of ways. Mm. And so it was designed initially for performance artists, people who are like sound engineers or lighting engineers, so that they could go into an environment, a live environment, and then manipulate sound and light to music or to very specific criteria. And it's malleable. I can take this device and I'm continually tweaking it and adding things and taking away things that gives me more functionality. Right now, I'm basically struggling with how do I bring music into the device so that I can manipulate visual imagery with sound. And it's a bit of a challenge because I don't know this stuff. I'm sure that there are people that have qualifications that could really do this much easier and much quicker than I do. So
probably get a few phone calls after the show.
That's good. Oh, awesome. I'm open. Because I think one of the really wonderful things about this is, and it kind of relates to Anchor, Press, Paper, and Print, it's about collaborations, it's about working together. And so eventually I'm sure that I will have a partnership with with a museum or a sound engineer or a lighting engineer where we can bring this stuff where a whole front of a building is illuminated with these moving, morphing images.
Nice.
Into the clouds. I mean, the idea of projecting images into the clouds and having those change. And I mean, I see this stuff.
Yeah, and it's a nice section of the moment in time, right? The impermanence of an object, but the idea of light and sound filling a room, we've all experienced, you know. You go to see music in a club, and it's really an amazing thing. I love the fact that you can pull a moment of it too and have an actual permanent print from it. And this is all technology based. So a lot of what we see in the Fab Lab too is stuff changing into programs that are easier to use that everybody can do. And I liken it to the whole revolution of, I always say, it's a cultural paradigm shift that we can build things now with computers and that it kind of changed how we build things. And it literally happened 20 years ago. But it helps us reevaluate, redetermine what we're going to do based on technology and how we approach it. And you guys are perfect examples of people who embrace this immediately, which is great. Now, I know we talked a little bit about photography. Photography is a bit of a stickler point in art history in general because photography has kind of always been the outsider thing. You know, it's, is it art? Is it not art? You're using a process, but you're using, you know, a photograph and, you know, everything back to daguerreotypes. So am I saying that correctly?
I think so, yes.
Marilyn's laughing, of course, right? So it's, you know, how photography evolved. And I knew an instructor, I know I talked about her at Columbia, who was taking pinhole cameras and she was taking scanners.
Yes.
She'd take the top off the scanner and put the pinhole fixture on it. And once she had it focused on the glass, she would disable the light and she just pushed the scan button and it would basically record the image she had on it. And then she was also doing the bit where when the camera moves across the scanner, she would shift it a little bit and create these really interesting images. Or if you look at, let's say, the late work of Francis Bacon, the painter. Everyone's familiar with The Pope and The Sides of Beef, which we all love. But if you look at his later work, it was unbelievable. I saw a show in New York, and he went from being a painter that I liked to being one of my favorite painters. And he was taking photographs, and he was running Xeroxes of them, and then he would crumble up the paper and throw it on the table and then paint the distorted forms there. So in the simplest of terms, we've been applying digital technology to how we generate art and how we see our reality and how it applies to everything for a long time. And it's kind of come to a culmination. And I think when you and I were playing in the Fab Lab and we'd do like Digital Art Fridays, we'd try to get it done once a month, you know, it just kind of came home to me how this is really a commonplace thing now for most artists and you don't even realize when it's happening. But then I realized how ignorant I was and how long it had been around, as Marilyn said.
I have to jump in here and talk about Henry Holmes Smith, who back when in the early 70s, when David and I were this at the Center for Photographic Studies, Henry Holmes Smith was a professor in Indiana University, and he would pour Karo syrup on glass plates and then make photographs out of them. This is before the computer, before digital anything. But if you look him up, they have that feeling of being digitally created.
Nice.
They're actually kind of figurative as well.
Now, Marilyn, let's talk a little bit about your art. I've seen some pretty amazing stuff, and you're still kind of in that paint realm, right? But you're doing shapes.
Well, I was a painter for 50 years. Oil on wood, oil on canvas, constructions. When we moved to Kenosha in 2016, and we have our studios on the second floor of our house, and I didn't want paint fumes. I didn't want solvents. I tried various methods, not using solvents, and nothing was working. And I had taken papermaking at Columbia College. I taught there for 16 years, and Center for Book and Paper Arts, which no longer exists. Columbia also eliminated that program, as well as Anchor Graphics. Two internationally known important programs were eliminated. So when we moved to Kenosha, not only did we start up a new print shop, community-based, but I began looking at my handmade paper and making large sheets of paper, big circular sheets, in the backyard with what's called a deckel box. Mm-hmm. And you beat pulp, you pour it into the box, you pull a plastic sheet away, the pulp settles, and I add pigment to it, and I make these large sheets of handmade paper. Then my smaller sheets of handmade paper, I print relief blocks on them, cut them out, and collage them onto my larger sheets.
Nice.
And my imagery is the convergence or the clash or the conflict between industrial waste and marine life. And papermaking is a watery material. It's perfect for this. It looks like you're looking into the water. My machine parts I get online, and I download them, and I print them out, and I redraw them. I cut them out on a block, and then I print them. And then once they're printed, I cut them out, and I collage them. So
nice.
Kind of using all of it.
Yeah, and sometimes, let me turn it over to Steve for a second.
Keep going.
Sometimes, I was going to say, sometimes digital is not in a way that's direct, and it comes into play in other ways. And I'll start with, okay, so let's say I'm going to make a painting and I'm going to use digital media for it. And this is relating kind of what you're saying about process. And mm-hmm. I might bring some digital into a part of the process, but it's not necessarily a huge role
right.
in what happens on the actual piece. So if I draw a pencil drawing, I'm going to possibly scan it on my computer and bring it in. Mm-hmm. But I still start with that organic pencil drawing. And then I figure out a way to use the stuff. Now, have you been able to get anything into papermaking that's advanced manufacturing or digital? Or are you just still the blender?
And no, I actually have a Hollander beater in our basement. There's a guy named Mark Lander.
And I don't know what that is. So what's a Hollander beater?
I'll tell you.
All right.
So there's a guy, Mark Lander, in New Zealand who makes these. And we got one from him. He shipped it out to us. And it's essentially, it was invented in Holland in the 1700s. Some countries, they still beat rags by hand. In Japan, they beat plant fiber by hand. But a Hollander beater, you put the fibers into the beater and it goes around. And it's an oval-shaped machine. And it has a wheel. And the wheel has teeth, but the teeth are blunt. And what it does as the fibers go around and around and around, or the cloth or the material, those teeth pull the fibers apart. And so after an hour or two, you have this cottony, wonderful pulp. And that pulp is what you make paper out of. You can use flax, you can use cotton, you can use abaca. Abaca is from a banana-like plant in the Philippines, from the leaves of this plant. I use cotton mostly. It's softer. And but it's all everything's done by hand after I've beaten my pulp.
Nice. I think I did two or three laser prints using Maryland prop paper. I think.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So it's if I'm lucky, if I hang around Maryland and David enough, they every now and then will slip me a custom made piece of paper, or sometimes if I'm lucky and I'm around David, there's an actual print on it. I really dig the robot series, and we can't have a Fab Lab segment with art without talking about actual robot imagery, which David has used in the past. So, but yes, I mean, and that's why I say sometimes the unconventional things that you don't think of as being industrialized, digitalized, having any connection to advanced manufacturing, do. And then we've encouraged our artist friends to come out and explore. Now, we did end up having a culmination with a friend I went to college with, Rachel Cleese. Am I allowed to say her name on the air there, Scott?
Oh, yeah.
No? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. She had a gap in a schedule at the Kenosha Museum. So we did a pop-up show. It was up for 2 weeks, and we did a digital art show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing thing. And one of the things that was kind of cool at this show was we had everything from pieces that were fully generated, you know, with digital equipment and digital imagery, to I think we even had Alex Mandley bring some pots, and the only reference he had to digital in his pots was he had made a little cell phone crafted on this vase or pot that he had there. And Alex is a brilliant, brilliant ceramicist, and it was really fun to have him in the show and listen to his take on how, you know, digital was moving in and how electronics have affected all of our consciousness.
So that's Rachel Cleese Anderson. She's the curator at the Kenosha Public Museum. And she creates some really wonderful works.
Yeah, with a little luck, we'll do some more with her. Yes. But I think everyone was really surprised because they would walk in the gallery and they'd look around and they'd be like, oh, this looks like an art show. You know, and again, the misperception of digital art, you know, as opposed to, you know, utilizing digital media in your art.
There's another paper maker, Melissa Potter, and she's a professor at Columbia College, and she was directing the Center for Book and Paper at Columbia. And she has made paper in which she embedded, I'm not sure how she did it, but she embedded electrical wires or something that emitted light. So
wow.
She has done a lot of work in that area as well.
That'd be a good T-shirt.
Yeah.
And one of her colleagues, Paul Cantonese, has really, really embraced, and he was the one who taught me about Max, has really embraced that technology in his work sending up GoPro cameras in hot air balloons and then putting scaled markers on desert landscapes and then putting those totally out of context so that you're really confused about scale.
Wow.
And one of the last things we did when we were in Chicago was Paul Cantonese and David collaborated. Paul had drones with ink, and the drones came down. We were in the papermaker's garden, which has since gone. But he had large lithostones on the pavement, and the drones would drop ink, and he would kind of direct them to make marks.
Kind of calligraphic.
Wow, calligraphic marks,
so
kind of
cool.
Like Robert Motherwell. Yeah. And then David would take the stones back to the print shop, and he would process them and hand print them.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got to show me some of that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And so, you know, I think that it's so apt that you talk about the paintbrush as a tool. And I think for a long time, I personally got a lot of kind of, well, you know, it's photography. It's not really art. It's like, but I think what happens is you, as a visual person, it's like, well, it's a tool. This is how I see. This is how I navigate my experience in my world. And using whatever tool is necessary. And actually, one of my mentors inspirations was Edward Weston. And when I was in school, I read this thing by Weston in his day books where he said, I would say to any artist, wherever you're drawn and pulled, as an artist, you are obliged to go in that direction because that's what it's about. That's what creativity is about.
Mm-hmm. And there was another at the Center for Photographic Studies in Louisville. The mantra, would you say, it was called Celebrate Risk Taking. And we still use that. We use that starting our print shops. We use that in our work to celebrate risk-taking in all of the artwork that you do, because you don't know, if you don't try it, you don't know what it's going to do.
No, and that's some amazing stuff. And that's what we envisioned the Fab Lab as it evolved, developing, whether it was drones that we teach at the SC Johnson IMET Center, whether it's the laser engraving, the whole host of technologies that you've talked about, merging that technology into a creative environment is huge, because that's where you can get expression. That's where you can get wonderment. That's where you can get inspiration. And that fusion of using technology that we have, because the SC Johnson IMET Center is huge about technology. It's one of the focal points in Wisconsin for technology. But using that technology is what's critical.
Scott, back to you.
Yeah, thanks again, you guys. I just want to say thanks to all of our guests today, David Jones, Marilyn Propp. And for more information, to view your guys' art one last time, any websites or any areas where we can go to view this art?
PropJonesStudio.com.
Great.
Yeah, that's it. And you can always see my stuff, too. JohnZern.com. It's just my name.
Well, thanks again, you guys. We appreciate having you today. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is WGT.